Interlock my body, but my mind is free. Interlock my body, but my mind is free. Interlock my body. When a prisoner is released, he or she is under mandatory supervision. We'll hear from Roy, a prisoner who is currently in a minimum security penitentiary in Quebec, make a short commentary on mandatory supervision, and he explains briefly when mandatory supervision came into being and how it functions and how it affects those who are released from prison.
So mandatory supervision was initially introduced in 1970. It was first tabled in the House of Commons in 1971, and what it basically is, it was an alternative to the earned behavior time that was taken from your sentence when you first entered into prison. And how that evolved was that when a person came into prison, he automatically received 25% of his time reduced for good behavior that could be lost if he was, getting in trouble and behaving badly. And so he automatically only did 3/4 of his sentence. Now, the rest of that sentence was subject to 3 days a month, which was also reduced from his sentence for every month that he served of that sentence and maintained that good behavior status. So basically, it almost came down to 1/3 of your sentence was taken off for good behavior as long as you didn't get in trouble. After you served the 2/3 of your sentence, presuming that you did not really get a parole, then your sentence was deemed to be completed after 2/3. Now in 1970-71, there was mandatory supervision was introduced so that once the person had served the 2/3 of his sentence, the last 1/3 of his sentence was served on parole. In other words, mandatory supervision. So that he actually did serve his full sentence, and whether or not he was well behaved or not within prison. So once that incentive was taken away and added on as a supervisory period after his release, it created a problem whereby people who before may have finished their sentence after 2/3 were still basically serving their sentence while they were free and under supervision. And any minor violations that this person would commit was subject to having their supervision period suspended, and they were put back into the penitentiary to serve the balance of their sentence. During that period of time when they were sent back into prison, they also came up for another review. So basically that 1/3 of that sentence that was left became another sentence. And 1/3 of that sentence, they would be reviewed. And they could be released again after 1/3 or after 2/3 and still serve the rest of that sentence on mandatory supervision. So they could fundamentally be suspended or revoked numerous times before that sentence actually finished. So which means they'd be going in and out of prison constantly from the time that they've been released to the time that they eventually finish that sentence. And that's what we call the revolving door syndrome. And so with this revolving door syndrome, the prisons have been kept full for quite some time during the last 30 years. But since that time, they've introduced a lot of therapy requirements because of the increased drug use that has contributed to the increased crime rate to maintain their drug habits. And actually, it's working to a great degree, because now when people who would normally come to the penitentiary, if they're at the provincial level, they're given the option of taking drug programs instead of being sent on to penitentiary. And in many cases, those people don't come back and commit crime and end up getting a federal term. So what has happened is basically the prisons over the past couple of years, in fact between 2001 and 2003, have reduced by 2,000 inmates federally across Canada in federal prisons. And it sort of caught the Correctional Service of Canada by surprise, because they had been gearing up over the past numerous years for an increase in prisoners due to mandatory supervision, but which has been offset by the new therapy programs. And now we have prisons that are basically emptying. And this prison where I am in particular has 270 inmates, which has a capacity of 460, and they're thinking of shutting down more of the cells over here because they just don't have prisoners to fill them. And in fact, they may even have to shut down other minimum security prisons in order to keep this one operating, which means they have to transfer inmates from lower security prisons back up to a higher level of security prison to keep those prisons running, where they have more employees and they have more investments and they're more permanent establishments.
Could you give an example of what kind of minor offenses that prisoners are taken off the streets and then put back into the prison, and how that procedure takes place too when that happens?
Well, for example, if someone was to be working under the table, which happens on occasion, you know, they may be collecting welfare, they might not have the tools to get a proper job because of being in prison for a number of years. They may have lost a lot of their community support. They may work under the table for a short period of time. Now, on welfare, you can work a certain amount of hours or bring in a certain amount of income before you have to claim that amount of money. But say, for example, they were to make a little bit more money than that, and they didn't reveal that information to their parole officer at the time because they didn't think it was that important. Maybe it was only $50, maybe it was $100, maybe it was more. But that would be considered an infraction of the person's mandatory supervision rules, where he has to disclose all financial transactions, income, and expenditures to his parole agent so that they know that he's not getting money from illegal sources. Now, under those circumstances, the person could be have his parole suspended. He'd go back into the penitentiary, or he'd wait for 15 to 30 days before he would see a member of the parole board, and they would decide whether or not to re-release him or to keep him for another 60 days for a more intensive study of his case, in which case he may be in prison for as long as 3 months before he's finally released again, if he is released again. But by that time, if he does have a job or an apartment or a car or other responsibilities, including may have built up some community support and people who trusted him, he may lose all those things during that short period of time. Because when people do go to prison, no matter what they go to prison for, they usually lose community support and any material things that that belong to them, like their apartment, their car, their sometimes their job and sometimes their family, because people just abandon them because they've disappointed them and they've gone to prison or committed a crime. So this sort of thing is where basically where the pressure comes from, where people become totally apathetic because they lose hope. Because every time they get back out in the street and they find themselves re-establishing themselves, they commit a minor infraction. And this is basically called lack of transparency. If the agent does not believe that you're telling them the whole truth, they can suspend you on suspicion. They don't have to have any proof. And this is what is causing the great degree of frustration within the prisons, because people are feeling that they don't have any chance of making it to the end of their sentence. And in many cases, inmates have actually been putting off the release date and serving as much of their sentence as they can, so they spend less time in supervision, so that they'll have they'll feel more secure that they won't be pulled off the street and thrown back into prison at a very short notice. You can lock my body, but my mind is free. You can lock my body, but my mind is free. You can lock my body, but my mind is free. You can lock my body, but my mind is free. We were just listening to Roy, a prisoner in a minimum security penitentiary in Quebec, comment on mandatory supervision. This interview was recorded in June 2003.